Morning. Well, thank you all very much for coming to this review of our interim results for the 24 weeks ended the 4th of March, 2017. The financial highlights are these: group revenues are up 7%, adjusted operating profit on a constant currency basis are up 23%, adjusted profit before tax then up 35%, adjusted earnings per share is up 30%, and the interim dividend the board has declared will rise by 10% to 0.1135. Another period of large capital investment, 416 million pounds, and yet we end the period with net cash on the balance sheet for the first time in a while of 190 million pounds. So strong cash flow characterized the period too. The business highlights for us are these: excellent progress really across the group, strong underlying growth. That's the consequence of a lot of hard work by a large number of people now over a good many years, and of course we have benefited as well from currency translation. In Primark, U.K. trading has been good. Sales are up 7%, like-for-likes up 2%, and the selling space expansion, particularly in continental Europe and the U.S., has, if anything, accelerated, where we think now that we will open 1.5 million sq ft of new space this year. I think the number previously we were stating was 1.3 million sq ft. Since the end of the period, so 4th of March, trading in the U.K., actually across all our markets, has been strong as well. Late Easter's help. We think the ranges in stores are very strong, and I've blamed weather enough in the past to give it credit this time. It's been nice and warm leading up to Easter, late Easter, and that's undoubtedly been a help. So trading has been good these last 4 weeks. We've seen a step change in the sugar profits in this year. We said it was coming, and it is. And then grocery ingredient, both profits and margin have progressed once more. And then last but not least, just to repeat my point about the strong cash flow in the period. And with that, and for more detail, I pass over to John.
Great. Thank you very much, George. Good morning, everyone. Moving on to the income statement, the 2016 half-year numbers have been restated. The restatement reflects last year's change of accounting policy for sugarcane roots following adoption of the amendment to IAS 41 in the second half, which permitted the replacement of the fair value of Illovo's cane roots with their depreciated historic cost. I've provided a schedule at the back of your slide pack, you'll be relieved to hear, showing the effects of this on the income statement and balance sheet line items for reference. It only had a small impact on the sugar segment and the group numbers, reducing adjusted operating profit by 5 million pounds and adjusted earnings per share by 0.3. So coming on to this slide now, revenue of 7.3 billion was 19% ahead of last year at actual exchange rates, benefiting from last year's devaluation of sterling on the translation of our overseas results. Underlying growth was strong, with revenue at constant currency 7% ahead. A table of average and period-end exchange rates is also included at the back of your slide pack. Adjusted operating profit was 36% ahead at 652 million. Of the 171 million year-on-year increase, 51 million was the result of translation. At constant currency, we were 23% ahead. The adjusted profit measure excludes amortization of non-operating intangibles, profits less losses on disposal of non-current assets, and transaction costs. Following the buyout of Illovo's holding company minorities last June, we moved Illovo's financial year-end to August. The effect of this in this half-year is beneficial, so on the profit line of some 20 million pounds, with the inclusion of the Illovo profit for September, which seasonally is a high profit month. This year's unadjusted or statutory operating profit was 640 million, 36% ahead of last year. This year's income statement includes the pre-tax profit of 255 million on the sale of businesses, which comprised the disposal in November of our U.S. herbs and spices business for 294 million, resulting in a gain of 72 million, and the sale of the South China sugarcane business in December, realizing a gain of 183 million. Total proceeds from the disposal in China, including debt assumed by the purchaser, were 297 million. Net interest expense is in line with last year at 25 million, with the adverse effect of the translation of interest on our U.S. dollar-denominated private placement debt. Profit before tax increased by 92% to 867 million and by 35% to 624 million on an adjusted basis. Last year's tax charge, you'll remember, benefited from the revaluation of deferred tax liabilities to reflect announced reductions in the U.K. corporation tax rate. In addition, a change in the mix of profits by tax jurisdiction has increased the underlying rate this year to 22.7%, and that compares with the 21.3% reported last year. Tax charges on the gains on disposal of businesses increased the reported rate to 25.5% this year. Adjusted profit before tax was 35% ahead, but with the higher underlying tax rate and higher earnings attributable to non-controlling interests, adjusted earnings per share increased 30% from the restated 0.458 to 0.597. Perhaps surprisingly, following the buyout of Illovo's holding company minority interest last year, adjusted earnings attributable to non-controlling interests increased, and that was from 1 million last year to 10 million this year, and that reflected the significant improvement in Illovo's profits. Unadjusted earnings per share, which includes the profit on sale of businesses, increased 79% to 0.805. I think when looking at percentage increases like these for the first half, it's appropriate for me to set a context for the second half. We do not expect growth in the second half to be at the same rate as that in the first half, and it's for the following reasons. The translation benefit in operating profit, if exchange rates remain at current levels, although slightly moved over yesterday, after yesterday's results, but nevertheless at these sorts of levels, will be less in the second half. We expect the full effect of sterling weakness against the U.S. dollar on Primark's purchases to result in a greater margin decline in the second half because our currency hedges were at more advantageous exchange rates in the first half. As already explained, last year's change in Illovo's financial year-end benefited the first half by some 20 million, and 2016 was a 53-week year for the group, and so the second half last year covered 29 weeks, and that compares to a normal 28 weeks this year. The board has declared an interim dividend of 0.1135 per share, an increase of 10% on last year. Moving on to the balance sheet, equity shareholders' funds increased by £1 billion to £7.8 billion over the last 12 months. So it's a really good, strong increase. So the main drivers of that were the benefits of currency translation, profit from operations, and then also the profit made on the business disposals. Intangible assets were marginally higher, with additions and gains on translation being almost offset by reductions arising from business disposals and the annual amortization. The drivers of the £678 million increase in PP&E and other non-current assets were translation and fixed asset additions ahead of depreciation. The lower working capital this year is largely the result of the business disposals. Working capital expressed as a percentage of sales, which as a management team is the KPI that we look at for continuing businesses, is much improved. And the thing I would highlight there is that it does reflect tight stock management at Primark, and with obviously for the consequences for markdowns at Primark, which are well within control. The increase in the current tax liability is due to the higher profit and tax still to pay on the disposal of the US herbs and spices business. I've talked before about the requirement to adopt the new lease accounting standard by our 2020 year end. We estimate that adoption would add some £3 billion of lease obligations for the current Primark estate to the balance sheet. Now, just to ward off any questions like I had at last time, Richard, I must emphasise that our financial strength is such that this will not change our approach to investment. Our lease obligations clearly outweigh our bank obligations, and put into context the improvement in our net debt from £421 million last year to net cash of £190 million this year. The increase in provisions primarily relates to the business disposals and various reorganisation costs. Bond yields fell to very low levels at the time of our last financial year end, and the pension asset of £16 million last half year moved to a deficit, you may remember, to a deficit of £290 million at the year end. A small increase in yields over this half year has reduced that deficit to the deficit of 203 that we see at the half year. The reduction in non-controlling interests reflects the buyout of the minorities in Illovo's South African holding company and the sale of the sugar businesses in South China. The remaining non-controlling interests here relate to Illovo's other operations outside South Africa. Cash flow in the half year was strong. We generated a free cash flow of £259 million in the first half, and that compared with £14 million last year. The biggest drivers of this improvement were the higher profit and lower working capital outflow. Capital expenditure for the group was £62 million higher than last year, driven by a big increase for Primark. The tax paid to date on the business disposals was the main reason for the increase in the group tax paid. Dividends from joint ventures and associates were substantially higher this year, with a £35 million dividend from Stratus Foods, our US vegetable oil joint venture, which is now very cash generative. And indeed, it was able to fund from its own resources the acquisition of Supreme Oil in the half year. Disposals less acquisitions comprise the cash proceeds from the two business disposals, net of costs, and £86 million spent on the acquisition of two small UK sports nutrition businesses and a specialty ingredients business for AB Mauri in North America. So, coming on to the segmental analysis. On all measures, these are strong results. So, on the continuing businesses line, first of all, revenue for continuing businesses up 21%. Profit from continuing businesses up 36%. Moving on to the margin and the return on capital employed, if we take into account the effect of the disposals, the group margin was 7.9% last year, moving to 9.0% this year. And the group return on capital employed on an annualised basis rose from the 17.6% last year to 21.2%. Clearly, the disposals had a benefit in both margin and return, as well as the underlying improvement in both measures. Grocery profit and margin improvements were driven by Twinings Ovaltine and a further recovery at George Weston Foods in Australia. The profit at sugar has recovered to deliver an annualised return of 16.6%, clearly more acceptable. and ingredients has improved, generating an annualized return of 14.9%. So I think when you look at the return numbers, you can see that there's a very strong set of return numbers in each of the segments now. The margin contraction of 170 basis points at Primark results, as expected, from the transaction effect of the US dollar. For the full year, I continue to expect a margin decline of some 200 basis points. So no change in that outlook for the full year for Primark. And as a consequence of the tight stock management that I mentioned before, markdowns are expected to be marginally below the level of last year. Finally, segmental analysis by geography. Revenue was ahead in all regions. Translation was clearly a major contributor to the strong growth in the regions outside the UK. In the UK, profit and margin saw a modest decline, with the improvement in British Sugar and Twinings more than offset by the reduction in Primark's margin and a decline at Allied Bakeries. The strong profit improvements in Europe and Africa was driven by sugar, especially Illovo, but also Azucarera, and also by our enzymes businesses that I think are well worth a mention. In the Americas, ACH, Twinings, AB Vista, and both AB Mauri and ABF Ingredients contributed to the profit growth. The profit improvement in Asia Pacific was driven by strong trading for Twinings Ovaltine in Thailand and China, and a much improved performance at George Weston Foods in Australia. At that point, I'll hand over to George. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Starting with sugar, as we always do, really good improvement in the profitability of this business in the first half. We are one of the lowest cost producers of sugar globally. We are, I think, increasing the gap to others. The improvement, performance improvement savings program keeps on generating tens of millions of pounds every year in new savings. And then the repositioning of the portfolio, the sale of South China cane sugar assets and the buyout of the minority of Illovo has also improved this business. That second, the buyout minority, of course, was in June last year. We've seen higher sugar prices globally, and I'll show you some charts of them in a second. And so that with those higher sugar prices, with cost reduction, all the country operations in our sugar businesses are now profitable. But really the improvement in this business over the last few years has been about so much more than simply higher sugar prices. Here then are sugar prices, the most commonly traded sugar on the world market, New York number 11, went up to 22 cents, is now so 16, 16 and a half. We've had 2 years of deficit production. I think looking forward into next year, we think that the market will be in about balance. So we expect to see very reasonable sugar prices continue for another year. EU, of course, is coming to the end of the old regime, deregulation of sales, which I think will have an effect on the EU market in years to come. It's worth mentioning, of course, that as we go into the first stages of the new sugar regime, the stock levels in Europe are going to be very low. I think that will be supportive of price, at least for a little while. Our European operations then turning to there, we are buying beet at a lower cost than previously. We produced less sugar in the year to date, 0.9 million tonnes against a quota of 1.1 million tonnes. And that was to get through stock levels, which were very high due to high production a couple of years ago. Those stocks have now gone. We will be increasing the acreage planted to sugar beet this year, but only back to historic levels of perhaps 105,000 hectares. I think we were around about 70 in the year just gone. Spain also increased production. We've had a very good campaign in the south of the of Spain. We're just coming to an end of a very successful campaign also in the most northerly Spanish factory and the Spanish business is doing well. Just turning to some more specific comments about improvements in the cost base. Once more, it's coming from all areas, agricultural developments. Essentially, it's about getting more yield grown closer to factories to reduce distribution cost and to reduce cost of growing for farmers. We turn to factory process efficiencies, particularly but not exclusively energy. Hundreds and hundreds of small projects improving the cost base of our factories across the world. And then it's worth mentioning there's no such thing as waste in Allied Bakery. In AB Sugar factories. There are only co-products, some of which have value at the moment, some of which where we have yet to discover the value. I want to show you just a picture of an investment in co-product processing. This is anaerobic digestion in Bury St Edmunds. We're just commissioning this plant now, or it's just commissioned. Once we extract the sugar from sugar beet, we're left with a pulp, which previously was fed exclusively to cattle in the United Kingdom. We can now put it in an anaerobic digester, and instead of having the cows generate methane, we'll generate ourselves and feed it into the grid. It gives us good optionality with our sugar beet pulp. Then next to Illovo, we fully owned it, as I said, since June 2016. Our plan was to accelerate cost reduction. We're doing that. We're also focusing on regional sales and on domestic consumers. The African market for sugar is growing with lower sugar prices in the future in Europe. The value of European exports to the African producing countries will be less. So let's go about strengthening our regional sales capability. Here are a couple of examples of us doing that. The pack on the left was the single retail pack in Malawi. We now have four much more colourful and much more carefully considered in terms of size packs for the growing retail market in that country. And then again, consumer work in Tanzania, the old pack on the left, and then the much more attractive pack on the right. There's also a lot of work on routes to market going alongside this repackaging work, and it's going very quickly. You need a bit of luck from time to time. Just after we bought Illovo, the rains arrived. We've recovered from drought in both South Africa and also Swaziland. I think we look at that as icing on the cake. The rest of Illovo is a consequence of good management actions. So if that's sugar, over to agriculture, where despite revenue growth, higher commodity prices have led to a small decline in the profitability of this sector, particularly in the more commoditized parts of this business. We've seen pleasing progress, particularly in sales volumes in China. And then in the more value-added parts of our feed businesses, another year of strong performance from AB Vista, which specializes on phytase enzymes. And then we're excited by development of specialty proteins, which are also occurring within our agricultural portfolio. More of that in years to come. If I move next to our grocery portfolio, another very good performance from the grocery portfolio. Twinings Ovaltine again leading the way. Pleasing recovery at George Weston Foods continues. Very good sale, we think, of our US herbs and spices business, and also then in stripping cost out of ACH as a consequence of removing the complexity that came with the US herbs and spices business. And then we've made two small acquisitions, actually, in sports nutrition. A business called Reflex, another one called High Five. High Five does rehydration. Reflex is mainly about protein supplements. We're excited because they're two good companies, two very good brands. The sector is growing nicely. And it's encouraging many of us, John back down to the gym, me onto my bicycle, and all this is good stuff. Looking in more depth then at parts of the grocery portfolio, Twinings Ovaltine, another year of strong profit increase. Twinings made significant share gains in its major markets, UK, Australia, and also the United States. And Ovaltine is also growing more strongly than in the prior year, particularly on the back of new product launches in Thailand, which is its largest market. This part of the business is driven by very good marketing, innovative marketing. I want to show you one example of that in action. It's in Australia, where we have, I think, our highest market share anywhere for Twinings tea. And the question is, how do you drive more sales into Twinings? Well, you try to encourage women to drink more tea in the morning, and you do so by, well, we are attempting to do so by relaunching and repackaging a specific morning tea, so a light drinking tea, with packaging designed by well-known Australian women. The packaging that wins the vote from the general public each pack will contribute a sum of money to the charity of choice of the Australian women. The four finalists, I can't remember which one is hers, four finalists include Nicole Kidman, but also three well-known media personalities, one of which I'm going to show you more next, Carrie Blickmore, who is one of the presenters on the major morning news and current affairs programme.
I'm holding in my hands a very, very special box of tea. I will tell you why this is special. Because one Carrie Blickmore was one of about 33, I think, Australian women who were invited to design a box of tea. This is the Blickmore design, and it has now... The story gets better. That design is now down to the final four of all those entries that came in. She's been chosen for the final four. For what is a very, very special competition.
Yeah, because the winning pack, if you were the winning pack, and I've probably got no chance because I'm up against Nicole Kidman, but that's okay. If you're the winning pack and you end up on the shelves, then because you can buy them on the shelves now, but then one remains there for 4 years and 10 cents from every pack goes to your charity of choice, which is Carrie's Beans for Brain Cancer. So that's like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Really good leverage of marketing spend there. Okay. If that's a highlight, more difficult areas include bread, as it does every year. We've seen fierce year margin decline from competition and also inflation in wheat costs. We think we're doing well in the scrap, so our sales volumes have gone up through the period. We've also redesigned the packaging of Kingsmill to give it more stand out on shelf, but it's difficult. And Silver Spoon always struggles in a rising sugar market. Pricing tends to lag input cost of sugar, so they've also been doing it tough for the last 6 months. Elsewhere in grocery, Jordan's Dorset Ryvita much better, so good progress in cereals. That's Dorset and also at Jordan's. And then we saw a period of decline of Ryvita crisp bread sales. That decline has slowed as a consequence of good work the team has been doing, and that's very encouraging. World Foods, also another very good year of growth for Patax and Blue Dragon. It's worth pointing out, and I don't know whether you have it in your goodie bags, the repackaging and also new products under the Blue Dragon brand. Both those brands are in leading market positions now in the UK market. Turning then across the Atlantic to ACH, Mazola has now hit number one brand in the consumer oil market in the States on the back of the very successful and long-running plant sterols campaign. Just to remind you that corn oil contains more plant sterols than No, one of the Mediterranean one. Olive oil, my apology. We've also seen good share gains in our home baking portfolio. These now are the two remaining parts of ACH, so it's had a good first half. So in Australia, we've seen good bread volume growth through the period, not least on the back of what I think is the best a gluten-free bread product or bread that you can buy, that I've certainly tasted anywhere. This is Abbott's on the left-hand side, very encouraging and still fast growing. And then cost reductions continue at Don KRC and I think will continue for some while. Volumes remain good in that business too. So all in all, much improved margin in Australia and I think more to come. Turning next to ingredients, again, another very impressive performance from the ingredients teams. At AB Mauri, we've seen good trading in North America in particular. Asia much improved, both India, Southeast Asia, and China as well. And then despite tough economic times in Argentina and Brazil, which are two very big markets for us, we've traded well in both countries, most notably in Brazil. ABF Ingredients, the more specialty end of our ingredients portfolio, excellent performances by all five businesses in that portfolio. Enzymes in particular has been growing strongly, not least on the back of animal feed enzymes, but also in bakery and detergent enzymes. And then we've seen another year of good growth in specialty lipids, and also now in our protein extrusion business based in California, which to some extent had lagged behind the rest of the of ABFI. Pausing there, then, before we go on to Primark, just to repeat my highlights at the beginning, that Primark in the UK has had a very good period. I think it's on the back mainly of an improved offer in stores and also some followings. But let me give you a flavour of what spring looks like, what some of the top sellers are, and then we'll move on. To current top sellers. Worth calling out beauty products in the middle. This is a category we really didn't have 2 years ago. Fantastic quality at unbeatable prices, and we're trading extremely strongly in it, and all the other normal products, pool sliders, £4, distressed t-shirts at £9, embroidery, which I think will be a characteristic of the summer, at £10. Let me show you another example, the gingham dress. It only stayed in stores for a week. That it's garnered a lot of media coverage. As I say, it may be coming back into stock. I look at Flick at this moment. No, it's gone, sorry. This is Primark buying team back to their very best. Then summer. Kaftans, jersey shorts, Bardot tops, all coming your way, all at unbeatable prices, and all driving a very good sales performance in the UK as well as across our other 9 markets. So the retail figures are these: 11% revenue growth at constant currency, 21% at actual FX. 12% sales growth when you take comparable weeks and adjust for this 53-52 week year. Extensive new store opening programs, 29 stores through the course of the year, 8 more still to go, I think 16 in the first half, and then 5 in the weeks since the 4th of March. Strong market share gains in all our markets, notably in the UK. And then, as John has said, 200 basis point decline in the margin, which is no change in guidance. We've done good work to mitigate the consequences of the currency changes. We don't believe now is the time to be raising prices for UK consumers. Concentrating on the UK, sales up 7%, 2% growth, total market share well ahead, and strong offer. I'm just repeating myself. Continental Europe, the selling space has increased by 20%. There remains huge potential in all our markets. Many of our stores remain still over trade. New stores have been particularly notable for their successful openings in this year. Inevitably, we get some cannibalization. We're still at that stage of our development in almost all our European markets. And let me show you what the Hamburg opening back at the end of last year looked like. These were people queuing just for the new Primark story. So that was in December. In the US, we've now got 7 stores trading. The store offering continues to develop and evolve. We won't sell out of shorts this year as we did last year. We've extended the Boston store, and Staten Island, which is our 7th new store, has started trading very well. Particularly pleased with that one. Last time I presented to you, I showed you a slide a bit like this one, talking about the digital and social media capabilities of the Primark team. It is such an important part of our marketing mix now. I wanted to focus on it once more. I think last time I stood up, we had 8 million followers. We now got 9.5 million followers. They're growing by about 100,000 a month. They're across all geographies, all languages, so 10 different markets. 60% of all digital visits to Primark.com now come from a mobile device. That, again, is well up. We did anticipate it and prepared for it. When people get onto Primark.com, they're visiting 10% more content than they were 6 months ago. And we're using a lot more video as part of the marketing mix online, both on Primark.com, but you can also access it through the other social media routes in. And let me give you an example of what we're doing, because I think it gives you a flavor of just how commercially focused these videos are. So let me give you one on that is connected with the beauty ranges in store. Drives footfall, and our task is to use social media to get people into stores. Again, let me give you another example of how we're doing this. The chip mug has been an item of some renown or notoriety, depending on which way you look at it. This image was the most liked Primark Instagram image in our history. The chip mug didn't last very long on shelf. It is back in May. And then I think there's another batch arriving with other ranges, including purses and all sorts of other things in July. But this is then what we did with it. We told people where they could find it. Again, it is all about driving people into store. And I think we get better and better at doing exactly that. Okay, selling space expansion then. We've added in the first half to the 4th of March, 800,000 square feet, 12% weighted average increase in the portfolio, 16 new stores in 8 of the 10 countries. It includes a flagship in Amsterdam, and it also includes the extension of Oxford Street East, which is now up to, I think, 112,000 square feet, and is a really magnificent store. Here is Damrak, the flagship in the centre of Amsterdam. It's a wonderful, wonderful store, and the landlord refurbished the aisle next to it for our opening, and that looks quite remarkable. Oxford East is an increasingly important store for us. We've now got over 200,000 square feet of selling space in Oxford Street, with the Marble Arch store at the other end of Oxford Street, and we're getting closer to the day when Crossrail opens in Tottenham Court Road, which we think will give a further boost to that end of Oxford Street. So the 300,000 square feet that we've added, oh, a big one. So this is where the store increase has been year on year across the piece. All countries now up to 329 stores and 1.5 million square feet since this time last year. Since the half year ended, we've opened in Charleroi, Grenada, Staten Island, Uxbridge, another store in the Netherlands, and then the extension of Downtown Crossing. Just to reiterate, we expect not 1.3 but 1.5 million square feet to be opened this year. Okay, if I could summarise the group, really good progress and right across the group, and flattered as well by the benefits of currency translation. Primark's had a very good half year, particularly in the UK, and the rollout across continental Europe continues apace. Septange and Sugar, good performance across almost all the rest of the business, grocery and ingredients, with margin increases, profit increases, and then this very strong cash flow. We expect the underlying revenue momentum to continue into the second half. As John has explained, the second half rate of profit growth will be lower than the first, but our expectation for the full year has improved. And that we now expect to see good growth in adjusted earnings per share. So thank you very much indeed.
Okay, great. So we can take some questions. Shall we start with Warwick O'Kynes? Yeah, great.
Thank you. Good morning. It's Warwick O'Kynes from Deutsche Bank. I was wondering if we could start with Germany and Primark there, which I think it's been one of the more challenging markets. Do you think you've been losing market share, and what's the strategy over the next couple of years?
I don't think we've been losing market share. I think we've been increasing it. We have lost some same-store sales to two things, really. The first one is obviously cannibalization, and that's just inevitable. It's happened in all our markets. And then I think there has been some reduction in footfall on some German high streets. And I think it's a response to terrorism and very large levels of immigration. So we're not without our challenges in Germany, but I think we're on top of them, and the market's still growing. And the average sales densities in Germany, I remind you, are still well ahead of the group average. So it's still a really good business for us.
Thank you. And secondly, could I ask about more generally margin protection, let's say, in the second half of the year? Are you finding any areas of mitigation in the supply chain on top of the markdown reduction that you've been aiming at to try and limit that margin decline?
Yes, we've done some very good work making sure that store costs are properly under control. That's the largest area of discretionary spend. It's essentially labour in store hour scheduling. We've done good work there. We will begin to see some of the benefits of the going back into the supply chain, into the into the increase in the number and location of depots. So we've now got the Czech depot open. We've got Roosendaal in Holland open. So distribution mileages are coming down too. And then we keep a very tight control, I think as we always have, but with renewed emphasis on head office costs, both in Reading and in Dublin.
We'll go with Richard Chamberlain at the front.
Thanks. Richard Chamberlain, RBC. Yes, a couple more on Primark, please. I wondered if you can just say where the increase in space guidance has come from, which stores are opening this year. It sounds like a few are opening a bit earlier than expected.
We have a list.
In September.
We do have a list, Richard, yeah. So it really is stores that we were expecting to open probably in September, October, really coming just a little earlier. And actually the range is Italy, so Verona in Italy, another one in Holland, and we've got a few in the UK as well.
And just a question on the US. I mean, it sounds like, I think you said that the latest one in Staten Island's trading very, very well, and I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I just wondered why you think that is. Is that a particularly good location, or are you starting to learn from the earlier openings, and you know, if you found the right sort of format now, and you're adjusting the format more for the local market?
I think it's elements of both. It is a very good location. It's a very high footfall location, number one. And number two, the ranges are getting more and more appropriate and better timed. In our first year, there was probably as much harm done inevitably by selling out of the top sellers early, not having enough of them, and then too much of stuff that didn't sell. And I think we've corrected a lot of that this year.
Okay, thanks.
Great, thank you. Next one, Jeremy Fialco,
Jeremy Fialco at Redburn. So a couple of non-Primark questions. First one on sugar and sort of 2017-18 and onwards. Perhaps you could just elaborate a little bit more about what you're seeing as the sort of quotas come off in terms of, you know, production and pricing. Then the second thing is on your enzymes business, which is something you have singled out this time. Can you talk about, first of all, how big it is and, you know, what the main... Yeah, a bit more detail on, you know, how it's grown so successfully and what your main priorities are for that business. Thanks.
Right. So sugar pricing, we are at the very, very early stages of the next negotiating round. I think one of the characteristics of the future is that, you know, the set piece, looking forward, the set piece negotiating round will become a much more fluid sort of a thing. I think some contracts will get longer, some will get shorter. I think we're dominated still by the reality that there's not a lot of sugar around in Europe at the moment, and it'll be a while until there is, and also by the fact that the world market is underpinning prices to some extent as well. One hears and sees various statements about increases in acreage. A lot of the increase is just all of us getting back to where we were before we cut our acreages after the year of surplus. I think there will be some more acreage in France, but I'm not sure that there will be a lot more elsewhere, at least in the short run. So I think some of the comments about, you know, Europe being awash with sugar are slightly overstated. We, for example, we're up by 30%, but only back to where we were.
And then the enzyme business.
Enzymes are used in many different markets. We have a particular strength in animal feed and in phytase in particular. We've also got very relevant products in bakery. Wine and fruit juice, essentially clarification. Pulp and paper production. And textile isn't so important for us anymore, but detergent is. It's a very widespread business. The market is growing. We do think we have the best phytase enzymes available. And we've got a very nice, well-resourced, well-led business that provides sort of welcome alternatives to the very big guys.
I mean, I think behind your question is obviously it's a very high quality business, and the profit, it's obviously high margin, so the profit resides in both AB Agri and also in the ingredients segment. I will give you a feel. If you combine the profit for the two, then the profit for the combination is well over 40 million on an annual basis. So it's a very profitable business for us and has grown significantly over the years. So it's worth highlighting it, I think, because sometimes it can get lost in it. Fintan, Ryan, have it just on the, over there.
I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit more on the sports nutrition acquisitions that you've done within the grocery business in the first half.
Sure.
And is this part of a broader strategy to move into sports nutrition? And could we expect to see further acquisitions as you build out this business?
Sure. We liked the fact that it's specialised. There's both science in it and marketing. We like the fact that the sector is growing. We like the fact that the sector is still, to some extent, nascent. There's still a lot of players in it. We are going to combine those two businesses to begin with, try to offer the management teams, some of which come from us and some of which are still coming from those two businesses, technical support, marketing know-how, routes to market support, but keep their credibility in the sectors. High Five in particular in rehydration is a well-respected product in endurance, athletics, running, cross-country skiing, bicycling, and we don't want to lose the reputation that they've built up over a number of years. As to whether we can make further acquisitions, too early to tell.
And just as a follow-on, given that the margins have continued to deteriorate in the Allied Bakeries business,
sure.
Is this something that could be put under review in the foreseeable future?
We have to improve them. We have to improve them. And work to do that.
Okay, great. Take Jeff at the front.
Thanks. Jeff Ruddle, Morgan Stanley. Just the one question, please, on Primark, which is, should we be seeing its profits this year, or rather its margins this year, as temporarily depressed? I mean, I'm sure you're not ready to give us guidance for next year yet, but on a 3 or 4 year view, should we be going back to the traditional sort of 11, 12% EBIT margin, or is now 9.5, 10 the new normal?
The margins moved around a lot over a number of years, and we don't target it. So it's combining that fact, it's the consequence of everything else we do rather than the goal, with what you say. We don't want to give guidance with all the uncertainties that there are still about next year. Leads me to want to say nothing, really, about the longer term. It is, I share your observation that it's the lower end of where we've been, but...
Should we view there as having been any kind of structural change, I guess?
No, I don't think so. I think that the retail... I think there are a number of powerful headwinds in retail. The continued movement of some of that market online is one of the headwinds. The currency adjustment and the difficulty in a very fragmented market to get prices for prices to rise is another headwind, but who knows where currencies are going. And there's also been a quite marked trend in women's fashion away from clothing into other things. Women's fashion has declined quite strikingly. Now, whether that is a long-term trend or just the absence of powerful motivators in the sector, I think it's hard to tell.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, great. Should we go at the front? Simon.
Simon Owen at Credit Suisse. Just two questions for you. Just within the overall comments around cost mitigation and through Primark, can you just talk particularly about transport costs and just how significant they are and what the trend is going on there? And then can you also talk a little bit more about Italy and France in terms of the availability of space and your expansion plans in those two markets?
I think on those two, they're very good markets for us. And space availability is quite limited. So I think we'll expand there gradually as space becomes available. We won't chase it. We won't chase locations that in the long run we wouldn't want to be in. But I think the expansion will be gradual as a consequence of the difficulty of finding appropriate space in both those two markets. Freight costs, I would expect to rise over time. They've been very, very depressed. Just as a bit of useless information, we had a lot of containers on Hanjin around about Christmas. We got them all back in time for their appropriate season. But there were some dramatic moments through some of that. Freight costs are low at the moment, and I think we will see over a couple of year period freight rates going back to more normal levels.
But I don't think it's something that's going to have a massive effect on the margin, Simon. And then the other thing that George, I think, mentioned earlier is obviously it isn't just the freight to come into the port, but then it's obviously the distribution costs actually in market. And, you know, as he said, the opening up of those other warehouses has made sure that those distribution costs are kept very much under control.
And how much should we think about as freight costs? Is it mid-single-digit percentage of overall
input
costs?
I'll go there in terms of giving you a percentage. Right? Okay. You won't be surprised at that, Simon. Right. It was a good try, though. Yeah, Andy Hughes.
Yeah, Andy Hughes from UBS. On the assumption that your hedge rates at Primark are quite a lot worse in the second half than the first half, yes. Why is it that we're not seeing a more marked split between the H1 and the H2 margin at Primark? If you're down 170 in the first half and 200 for the year, you're not seeing that much of a deterioration into the second half.
I think what you are seeing in the second half is a greater impact from the mitigation from suppliers. Right. So, and if you think about it, it takes time to sort of get going on that. Yeah. So we're seeing that. So I think for me, that also is at least encouraging in terms of the positive for next year. Mm. So just to be clear, we're not giving any guidance overall on Primark margins for next year, but we know we've got the flow through effect, actually to a smaller extent of currency, but actually we'll probably have a bigger effect of mitigation coming through. Right. So it's the mitigation really from suppliers. Right. That's so the bigger point.
Still not based on any price increases in the second half.
The margin guidance here does not assume price increases in the second half. Yeah.
And your comments, just one other thing on markdown. You said markdowns would be lower year on year. Was that in your guidance at the start of the year?
That is marginally better as well, right, which is a help.
Okay.
So I think just given where the market is, I think it's important that we do call it out. Yeah. I think Primark has done really a very, very good job in terms of its, you know, management of stock. And so we don't have a markdown problem. Yeah.
Okay. Just one last one.
If anything, it's marginally positive for us.
One last one on the US, given that, you know, we're in the midst of a spate of department store closures. Do you see that as a sort of positive or a negative? Because I presume trying to second guess where to put stores, you don't want to put a store where there might be a raft of closures.
It's a very good point. What looked like good malls 2 years ago may not look like good malls in the future. And we do want... We do want clusters of great retailers around us, all working to draw consumers, and that's what a mall is. I think, as we've said from the start, we have to maintain our discipline because space availability in the States has never been an issue. That's not the game we're in. We're trying to get an offer that works profitably for us, and then we can roll it out much more easily than we would be able to in Italy or France, for example.
Okay, great, thank you.
Thanks. We had some other questions, I think. Yes, I think it's Georgian. Yes, it is.
Hi, it's Georgina Johanan from JP Morgan. Thanks. Just two quick ones from me, please. First of all, just to be absolutely clear, and I appreciate you're not giving guidance, but for fiscal 18 on the margin, where you talk about a bigger effect from mitigation, you mean a bigger mitigation effect year on year. You don't mean that actually the margin should be up year on year based on your current view of mitigation and FX hedging.
That's right. I mean, there are two things that roll into next year, the full year effect of currency changes and the full year effect of mitigation.
Great, thank you. And then secondly, just online, sorry to ask about that, but you've kind of, it feels to me like you've been increasingly talking about your digital strategy in terms of marketing and so on. So if you could just give us an update on your thinking on online, would you sort of consider doing any trials again with perhaps a third-party platform or anything like that? Any comments would be great, please.
We haven't got any plans to trade online.
Thank you.
Any final, Charles Picker, thanks.
Thanks very much, Charles Pick of Numis. Three questions, please. With Illovo's year end, you've given the profit impact. Can you give a rough pointer to the sales, please? What that 16% constant FX growth rate might have been, but for that year end change. Second one is, I think you've talked in the past about Primark buying more garments in non-dollar currencies. You've mentioned, for example, the Turkish lira. Yeah. What sort of percentage of its garments is it now buying in non-dollar currencies? And finally, on the space expansion at Primark, you've given a rough benchmark of about 10% per annum in the past. Yeah. With the extra square footage that you're bringing on stream this year, will that 10% for next year be impaired to any extent?
10%'s fine. Let's take the last one first. I think 10% is still fine for next year, okay? So I'm not... there is a bit of pull forward, but I still think that even from the larger estate, Charles, I think 10% is a good number, even though we've outperformed that for this year. Non-dollar, I don't think I've got an exact number, but I would say maybe about a quarter is non-dollar purchases for Primark. And then the Illovo revenue. I'm going to be honest. I don't know the answer to that one, but we'll get back to it, it's probably a couple of percent or something like that.
Okay. Sorry, okay. I just want to find one. Yeah. Any capex guidance pointers for the full year?
I think around the high 700s, 800. Alex at the front.
Alex Smith from Barclays. Where are we on sales densities in the US? It's kind of gone a little bit quiet. Are we still sort of in line with the group average?
Yeah, pretty well. Sorry? Yeah, pretty well.
I think pretty much so.
Okay.
Yeah. A bit early in the year to tell. There's a lot of small numbers. We think Staten Island a month in could be quite high. But we've got a couple which are below average. So I think group average isn't a bad place to be.
Should we think of Staten Island as a bit like Boston, and is King of Prussia still holding that average back?
Yeah, King of Prussia still holding
it. I think that's a good way of looking at it. Okay. Yes, I think that's right.
And do you want to talk about Spain? I guess it's one big market you haven't spoken about. Feels like for likes have slowed a little bit in the last year or so. Are they still positive?
They are still positive.
Yeah. Small positive, yes, yeah. Absolutely. And that's lapping from high positive from the year before.
It's worth mentioning Portugal is also nicely positive too. Smaller market, but good market for us.
But a reminder of the scale of Spain, sales will exceed €1 billion this year.
And still more space to go for.
And a lot of space still to go for, absolutely. And you look at some of the store openings in Spain, and they really are incredibly crowded. So they're very, very popular.
Granada being the most recent one, which is great.
Absolutely. Great. Any more questions?
Okay, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Thank you.